This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
the border between Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea has been sealed for nearly 2 weeks due to the alleged coup attempt against Equatorial Guinea President Teodoro Obiang Nguema. Merchants on the border say the closure is costing them business.
That was Moki Edwin Kenzaka reporting from the town of Kiosi, Cameroon. Full details coming up.
Also, at least a dozen people have died and more than 200 people were injured when a South Africa passenger train derailed and caught fire. The border closure between Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea is hurting merchants economically. And Somalia's prime minister starts the new year by firing 3 key ministers in his cabinet.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
A South Africa passenger train derailed and caught fire after hitting a truck at a road crossing today. Transport Minister Joel Maswanganyi says at least a dozen people have died in the accident. More deaths are expected as rescue crews comb through toppled and burned rail cars searching for the missing. More than 200 people were injured. The train was about 200 kilometers from Johannesburg when it hit the truck. The train was carrying hundreds of passengers from Port Elizabeth to Johannesburg during the normally busy holiday season.
The border between Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea has been sealed for nearly 2 weeks because of the alleged coup attempt against Equatorial Guinea President Teodoro Obiang Nguema. Merchants on the border say the closure is costing them business. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from the border town of Kiosi.
It is a relatively quiet atmosphere here at Kiosi, a town in southern Cameroon that borders Gabon and Equatorial Guinea. The town is normally a conduit for farm produce, beverages and other goods being trucked across the borders. But Cameroonian businessman Fidel Kemenye says activity has been at a standstill since the border was sealed, and Kemenye himself has been stuck in Equatorial Guinea for nearly 2 weeks. He says when they were returning from work on December 24 at about 4 p.m., they discovered that the military from Equatorial Guinea had blocked entry into their country. He says they thought it was a temporary move to control the huge number of people crossing over for end-of-year festivities, but that they have not reopened the border since then. Cameroonian food merchant Abdou Fayou is waiting for the border to reopen so his trucks can come back for more supplies.
They're not coming, the Equatorial Guinean, because they have the problem of security. No any passengers from the 23 to now.
Equatorial Guinean businesswoman Falamu Fatuma says the border closure is preventing her from making deliveries. She says since the border was sealed on December 24, she has not been able to do business and the goods she provides to her customers are perishing and she will not be able to refund their money. On December 29, Equatorial Guinea said it had arrested people on the border in possession of rocket launchers, rifles, and a stockpile of ammunition. It said the men planned to destabilize the government of President Teodoro Obiang, who has led the country since 1979 and is the longest-serving leader in Africa. Cameroon said it arrested 40 heavily armed men on the border and has strengthened security along the 290-kilometer boundary. Félix Ngelengele, governor of Cameroon's south region, says Cameroonians should be vigilant as soldiers are there to assure their security and safety in case of any attacks.
Le commandant d'armes de la place a pris des mesures.
He says the military has taken measures to rigorously check movements on the border between Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea, and surveillance measures have been intensified. He says there is an alert of insecurity from neighboring Equatorial Guinea, but that they are assuring the population that the situation is under control. Obiang, who is 75, was elected to a fifth seven-year term in 2016 in polls the opposition said were rigged in his favor. His country is one of sub-Saharan Africa's biggest oil producers, but a large proportion of its 1.2 million people live in poverty. In 2004, mercenaries attempted to overthrow Obiang in a coup thought to be largely funded by British financiers. Last week, Obiang said a war is being prepared against his regime, allegedly because of his length of time in power. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Kiosi, Southern Cameroon.
Somalia's Prime Minister Hassan Ali Kare has started the new year by firing three key ministers in his cabinet a day after he vowed his government would gear up for a fight against corruption. A decree from the Prime Minister's office said the Prime Minister dismissed the ministers for Interior Affairs, Foreign Affairs, and Commerce, replacing them with newcomers. The new appointees include a former information minister, a telecommunications businessman, and Somalia's ambassador to Washington, Ahmed Issa Awad. The firing of the three ministers and their replacement come a day after the Prime Minister said the country is still struggling with corruption.
News reports that Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn pledged to free all political prisoners appear to have misstated his message. Translations of his comments yesterday show that Desalegn actually said the government would review the cases of certain individuals affiliated with political parties, including party leaders who have been charged with crimes. He also said that in some cases, charges would be dropped or people would be released or pardoned, depending on what an investigation reveals. He apparently never used the words political prisoners. It appears that the government does plan to close Maekelawi, a notorious prison facility. Ethiopia has been accused of human rights abuses, including using mass arrests to stifle opposition and torturing prisoners in Maekelawi and other facilities. It was not immediately clear how many prisoners were held in Maekelawi. Ethiopian political activists had welcomed yesterday's report, but had expressed doubts that all prisoners would be freed or that rights abuses in prisons would end. Ethiopia has been hit by numerous anti-government protests over the past 2 years, which began in the Oromia and Amara regions and then spread nationwide.
A court in Zimbabwe set aside charges against a U.S. citizen accusing her of subversion and undermining the authority of former President Robert Mugabe. As Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, the court acted after prosecutors failed to provide her a trial date.
No comment right now, guys.
Thank you.
That is all Martha O'Donovan said to reporters outside the Harare Magistrate Court on Thursday. Just a little bit earlier, Magistrate Rumbidzai Mugwagwa had said this to the U.S. citizen. Further remand is denied. The state can follow by way of summons. She was arrested in early November last year on charges of subversion and undermining the authority of now ousted President Robert Mugabe after allegedly tweeting that the 93-year-old was a selfish and sick man. She denied both charges. She spent a week at Zimbabwe's maximum prison before being released on $1,000 bail. Obey Shava from Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is representing the 25-year-old American and spoke to reporters after the court ruling Thursday.
in the first place, there was no case. So something which they called a state, a case, is crumbled today, and we are quite glad that the court honored its promise. It removed our client from remand, and we are happy because of that outcome.
When O'Donovan last appeared in court in December, the judge promised to remove her from the court row unless she was finished with her trial date, which prosecutors did not do Thursday. However, under Zimbabwean laws, the state can summon her to court should it come up with a trial date, but all her bail conditions have been removed. O'Donovan works for Magamba TV, a small company that produces what it calls political satire and comedy programming. Just a few weeks after she was arrested, the military took control of the government, leading Mugabe to resign. His former vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, replaced him as president. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Patients in African hospitals are twice as likely to die after surgery than on average globally, according to a new study. VOA's Steve Barragona reports.
About 1% of surgery patients in Africa die of complications. That's compared to 0.5% on average worldwide.
It's really concerning when you see how high the mortality is in Africa, considering that, you know, the patients are generally fit and they're having a lot more minor surgeries.
University of Cape Town professor Bruce Picard and a group of colleagues gathered mortality data from 247 hospitals in 25 African countries, from Algeria to Madagascar. Their findings, published in the journal The Lancet, reveal a severe shortage of African surgeons, obstetricians, and anesthesiologists.
We're between 20 and 50 times lower than what we would consider a global minimum for providing safe surgery.
Most of the patients who died did not do so on the operating table, but in the days following surgery, he adds.
We're actually failing to recognize patients who are having complications in the post-op period, and so a minor complication actually ends up becoming a major complication.
But Picard says that offers an opportunity for improvement.
We can develop a risk calculator that will tell us before surgery which patients we think are going to get into trouble.
His group is planning a study in 2019 to see if they can reduce patient deaths by focusing limited resources on patients at the highest risk. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
18 past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. President Trump's former chief strategist Steve Bannon says nothing will ever come between us and President Trump and his agenda after the White House unleashed a scathing attack on Bannon for comments he made in a new book about the administration. Bannon is quoted in the book as saying he thought it treasonous and unpatriotic for the president's eldest son and others tied to the president to meet with Russians during the 2016 election campaign. President Donald Trump was furious and disgusted after reading the comments, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said yesterday. The president, the press secretary, and the first lady's communication director all issued statements during the afternoon blasting Bannon. He is an influential nationalist who was chief executive of Trump's campaign in the last 3 months ahead of the 2016 election before taking a senior position in the White House West Wing. Steve Bannon has nothing to do with me or my presidency, Trump said. When he was fired, he not only lost his job, he lost his mind. The president, in his statement, declared Bannon is only in it for himself and spent his time at the White House leaking false information to the media to make himself seem far more important than he was, at the same time that he had declared war on the media.
Music. 40 million people along the U.S. East Coast are bracing themselves for what weather forecasters are calling a bomb cyclone, a massive winter storm blowing through the Atlantic Ocean. The first bands of the snow began moving through the mid-Atlantic region of the eastern U.S. last night. The storm is expected to hit the northeastern U.S. hard. Hurricane-force winds are expected to hit the New England coast and into Canada. Blizzard warnings are out for coastal towns from Virginia through Maine. Forecasters liken the storm to a bomb because of the sharp drop in pressure in just 24 hours, creating tremendous winds. Meanwhile, brutal winter weather brought snow, ice, and freezing temperatures to parts of the country not used to such conditions. Snow covered the ground in Tallahassee in the southern state of Florida for the first time in nearly 30 years yesterday. Ice turned highways in Georgia and the Carolinas into dangerous skating rinks.
It is not an Olympic sport, at least not yet, but pinball has a growing body of top-level competitors and a growing number of international competitions. Faith Lapidus reports.
Pinball, which has been around since the 1870s, requires a steady hand and flexible hips. Players showed off their moves at the Chicago Pinball Expo, one of nearly 4,500 competitions around the world this year.
Pinball is not going away. It can't be replicated, so I think that's why it never truly goes away.
Zach Sharp, spokesman for the world's leading pinball manufacturer, Stern Pinball, is currently ranked number one of more than 55,000 ranked players.
I don't care where I'm ranked. Whenever I get a chance to compete, I want to win. And if I don't win, then, you know, on to the next tournament.
The game attracts players of all ages, including Escher Lefkoff, who started playing before he was old enough to reach the flippers without help. Earlier this year, at 13, he became the youngest world champion pinball player.
It was my day. I played great that day, and I won, and it was the most magical moment of my life.
His father, Adam, is also a ranked player, and there's a bit of friendly rivalry in the household.
Now, of course, Escher has won the world championships. And when we count world championships in our household, I've won, zero, and Escher has one. So Escher wins.
The resurgence of interest in pinball has made the machine's manufacturers winners, too. Revenue at Stern Pinball this year was up 30% over 2016, which was up 40% over 2015. The factory produces about 50 games a day.
It takes about 30 hours from start to finish. All these games are hand-built, so it's not like there's machines automating this.
That includes making the cabinets, pressing the playfield, running the wiring, and installing around 3,500 parts, all for the excitement of keeping that little silver ball in play. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
New research shows that most children in South Africa will experience sexual or physical abuse before they reach the age of 18. This disturbing statistic is contained in the South African Child Gauge 2017 report. It examines the country's treatment of its youngest and most vulnerable citizens. Nadia Sammy reports from Johannesburg.
The study concludes with a warning. South Africa must counter the damage done to children by violence, poverty, and inequality by investing in initiatives that support and enrich their lives. The 2017 Child Gauge puts the cost of damage to young citizens at 300 billion rand. That's just under 22 billion US dollars. The research, which is undertaken by the Child Institute and UNICEF, makes for grim reading. It shows one in three children will experience either sexual or physical abuse by the time they reach 18. It also indicates 12% of young South Africans live on a little over $1 per day. The report highlights that most local children simply don't have the tools needed to thrive. Lucy Jamison from the University of Cape Town's Children's Institute is the lead author of the study.
Violence holds children back and lack of nutrition. South Africa's quite a wealthy country in terms of the continent, but we are still seeing figures of 27% of our children below the age of 5 who are not getting the correct nutritional input, which means that their growth is stunted. And it's not just about physical development.
South Africa is one of the most economically unequal societies in the world, and substantial parts of its population live in poverty and without food security. The report finds that the top 10% of South African children are flourishing, but the bottom 70% are failing to reach their full potential. Jamison says a lack of nutrition slows down children's cognitive development.
Their brain doesn't develop as it should do, so they don't have the capacity to learn properly when they go to school. Also, the state of our education system, we are finding the first part of the school years, children need to learn to read. And in South Africa, children are supposed to learn to read in the foundation phase, which is the first 4 years of school. And at the end of those 4 years, 58% of our children can't read with comprehension in any language.
Jamison says the education curriculum assumes that once a child finishes the fourth year of schooling, he or she can read. If they can't, they will quickly be left behind. She says violence, poverty, and hunger come together, and as the children stuck in this cycle mature, they have lower employment prospects. The socioeconomic burden is then passed down to the next generation. The South African trend is not an anomaly, as very similar patterns are reflected around the continent. She points out African solutions to African problems are important.
If we look to countries within Africa, Uganda has run a very successful series of programs, the Good Schools programs, the Raising Voices programs. And we in South Africa can learn from that. Equally, we have programs here that we can share that fit the African context and can resolve some of these complex and integrated problems.
The 2017 Child Gauge report has been handed over to the Minister of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. The government will now examine it.
They are responsible for looking at the indicators individually. For example, they are currently working on an integrated program to combat violence against women and children. In each country in Africa has different governance structures and different departments, but it is true across the continent that we need health professionals, social service professionals, police officials, and the justice system to work together in the area of violence in particular. You know, so we need these kind of coordinating bodies.
It's not all bad news, though. The research shows poverty has decreased since the dawn of democracy in 1994. Children have greater access to services, and their survival rate is higher. More of the youth are also in formal housing structures. But these gains are simply not enough, and NGOs are asking for additional funding to help assist those youngsters who still need help with their most basic needs. For VOA Africa, I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share the ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.